How do we know that prayer is a, how do we know that the system of prayer is an effective one?
Well, I mean, the only way we know is from Nevuah. So you see, Chana was the answer. You see that Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah were answer. And the Gemara says a person shouldn't rely on his tefillah. A person shouldn't feel his tefillah are going to be answered, because then it leads to depression. Because as a matter of fact, there's a taste who says that. The Gemara says in one way cutting that says. And most things, like when it comes to children, when it comes to parnasa, when it comes to how long you're going to live, it's not totally an exclusive, it's totally a mazel. Because the Gemara said there's two great Talmid Chachamim. They're both when they were mispalel, rain came. So we know they were tzaddikim. And one died in his 40s, one died in his 90s. So the Gemara says, so the Tesis on the side says, what about tefillah? So Tesis says that tefillah can sometimes bring a person a special source, that it can override his natural mazel. So our view of tefillah is that we know that Kadosh Baruch Hu answers tefillah is from Tanakh, from Nevuah. But at the same time, we say in Shemayim Kaf Shemetzos Kofa. Well, Shemaya Tefillah doesn't say answer. Answer is on the kindness. But basically the concept that the Kadosh Baruch Hu answers Tefillahs is a pasuk in the main pasuk is a pasuk in Dvar Vashana. Niga Gadol Hashem Elokim Kovan Elav Tarashem Elokeinu B'chol Koreinu Elav. So that's a special source of Klal Yisrael. It's a different source when it comes to Tefillah. But most people don't know that, and they assume that every tefillah got its answer, or most every tefillah. That's not what Chazal teach. So you shouldn't think, you shouldn't feel secure in your tefillahs, because then it leads a person to depression, because it doesn't come true. So of course, Baruch Hu answers tefillahs, we know that. But we say he hears all the tefillahs, but not that he answers all the tefillahs.
Actually, the Sephardim saying Shmatzalinu, they say Choneinu Va'aneinu Shmatzalinu.
It's Choneinu and Shmatzalinu.
They say Va'aneinu.
Yeah. It's okay to say Va'aneinu.
You're asking for it.
You're asking for it.
Right. But not to rely.
Not to believe that because you won't respond, that the thing is going to occur. And so whatever you respond for is going to transpire.
Like, we still call Hashem Shomet Tefillah, not, we don't say, like, Onet Tefillah.
Right.
Like,
well, we do say in on the times, that's a separate source though. That an eight sar is a separate time of tefillah. What I was speaking about is an ordinary human life, you know, a person's ordinary human needs. So, I mean, you see, even the Obos, when they were Mespao, how they were still afraid. Yaakov Avinu was Mespao, right? That's the name of Yadoch and Yayezov. But you were Yaakov Mode, but it's over. None of the Obos just were sure, okay, we'll get rid of this problem. We'll be Mespao, we'll get rid of the problem. I mean, Yaakov Avinu prepared for three things. Prepared for Tefillah, prepared for Doron, to appease him, and Mochama. Well, so you know if it's true or not. So you see, it's an old Masorah that we have. So Abdul Gayim don't have such thing. They have to believe that everything they pray is going to be answered. See? But we from the outset say, what did Avraham Avinu say to God when he was Mespal? He said, Hinena Alto Dab Hashem Vanachu Afaveifer. I just began to be misspelled of God, and I'm off of Afer. So how could I expect that the Borei Olam should answer my prayers, my tefillos, when I'm just off of Afer? So the humility of Adam, of a Brahmavinu led him to conclude that, that it's beyond belief that God should answer our tefillos. And similarly, David HaMelech says, Mo'enosh kisis kimeno, v'enodom kisif kimeno. Who is man that God should answer? God should take notice of it. That itself is understanding. So in Al Masorah, which is the true Masorah, we see that we recognize the truth about the concept of tefillah. Now, not to use the concept of tefillah just to appease ourselves, but to recognize there's a certain reality here, and we're tied to that reality, whether we like it or not.
Without Tanakh, would it have been more logical to say that there does not exist the institution of tefillah?
That's a good question.
Well, not more logical, but just more like, would we have concluded?
Well, tefillah really is a further expression of the Bechiras Adam. It's a situation where the person expresses his Bechira under the finest terms, finest situation. Because the person is only with Hashem, and he makes a change in himself, and he places a request, and he frames it, and he thinks about it. So it's another step in a person's advancement in his Bechira and his perfection. So it would make sense that there should be such an institution. The institution makes sense, but you can't prove it. You can't prove it without a source, but the institution makes sense. Yes?
What does it mean to be omeid lifnei Hashem?
To have a mindset that there's nothing of significance except the existence of God. That everything emanates from Him, and there's nothing that has any specific significance other than that. Because on a day-to-day basis, we get caught up in our own problems and emotions, and things loom larger than they really are. So Omer Lifnei Hashem is a withdrawal from that state, and a recognition that everything depends on God. Yes?
What was the Gemara you quoted about two Tamei Chacham and one being a one dying and
four? Should I get it?
I just wanted to ask what the idea of Mazel was. Is that just that they're subject to the normal laws? Or?
Yeah, that's the Mazel means the laws of nature. But Taisha says, so what are women's power for? So he answers, because tefillah can sometimes overcome the Mazel. But it seems to be from Taisvis and from is the Chuvah Sar Rashbo also that he asks a question. He says that how could the Gemara say that it's probably a mazel? But if that's the case, so how come the Torah says everything is totally in if you keep the mitzvahs now? It's totally, so the whole Torah tells you that. It's totally skyhon, it's just totally in how the person has their schlissen. So he answers, he says, the Habi Yachad Habi Tzibur. One of the Tshuvas he answers. He says the Tzibur is treated according to their schlissen. But the Yachad can have a lot of schlissen, and yet he can have a fate that he lives a short life, because that's the way you might say in various terms, genetically, he's constructed. Yes?
What is the problem with being overly materialistic? Like a person who wants to have the latest gadgets and the latest cars, if there is these latest gadgets, and there is something to them, like it will make life easier for him, or there are nice things about them, so there is a reality to like why he would want them. It's not completely useless. But so why is it such a problem to be to always want these new things?
Who says it's a problem?
Let me rephrase my question. Is there a problem?
Oh, is there a problem? Well, I'll tell you, the Greeks used to look down at people that must have every little convenience. Because they say it's an imperfection in man. Because for every slight convenience is going to make a difference in your life. So they thought that it's an imperfection. But insofar as it does give you more time, and with today's technology, they didn't have today's technology. So, insofar as it does give you more time, and more time to learn, especially, it's a good thing. I would say it's a good thing.
Let's say it doesn't necessarily give you more time. It's the convenience of, you might enjoy it.
Nothing wrong with enjoying it. Nothing wrong with it. The only time you bid is if the person makes that his primary preoccupation. But to enjoy it, what's wrong with that? Enjoyment is good. Yes.
Based on this, enjoyment is good. Is there an objective, stopping point? For example, two different guys, they need a different amount of pleasure. We don't say that's bad, because fine, because you're a human being and you need and your psyche needs a certain amount of enjoyment. But nevertheless, is the ultimate to never be involved in these petty enjoyments? We say that we're human and that we enjoy, but is the ultimate to to isolate yourself on an island and just be involved in learning all that? Is that the ultimate?
You don't find that any gedolim that isolated themselves on an island, and except for Shimon Chayav, it was a time of danger. But the Torah is really a very social situation, because you have an obligation to, first of all, you need people to learn with, and you need people to teach, to keep the Torah going, and you need to do chesed, and you need a society. So it's a social situation, but your question still stands, because your question is...
Right, the social is... that's not necessarily like pleasure.
But your question is basically that...
What is the ideal to not be involved in?
Every person has a certain capacity. So the ideal is for each person, according to his or her capacity, to be able to engage in Chachmas Hashem. That's the ideal. According to your capacity. You can't overdo it. Because if you overdo it, then you're going to have psychological strain, and then it's not going to work. So you can only do what you can do. But the ideal is to go up to your capacity. Now, sometimes a person can increase their capacity. Sometimes he can't. But you have to be able to be realistic about it. Certainly it's worth a try to push it advance it a little bit. And that's definitely worth it. And then if it's too much, you can withdraw. But the person needs a certain amount of pleasure and enjoyment. You can't deny that. And you don't find... look at Yitzchak. Yitzchak Avinu, who said that he wanted the Mataman before he gave the brachas. So the Torah doesn't really show us people that are devoid of pleasure. That's not the ideal. But the ideal is, insofar as a person can put his energies into Chachmas Hashem, that's a more satisfying place to put it, and it's a better place, and the person gains knowledge. The person improves himself. Excuse me.
If you have two different people, and a person needs more pleasure, one who doesn't need as much of pleasure, he's on the...
He's more fortunate.
Right.
You can't measure by somebody else.
Right.
Because each person has to look at... And that's why the Ibn Ezra, I believe, says that jealousy is wrong. Why is jealousy wrong? Because jealousy is assuming if you were the only one, you would be happy with what you have. But now that somebody else has something more, so now you compare, and you feel that you want that thing. But just because the other person has it doesn't mean that it was meant for you. It doesn't mean it has any shackles to you. So you have to look at yourself as a complete person, as if you were the only person in the world. Because you only have to deal with your reality. The other person's reality shouldn't disturb you, because it's not your reality. That's his. Each person stands before God with their own reality, and they're judged accordingly. So a person that, like the woman dying, is not like us, and his capacity was unbelievable. I was able to study Torah 22 hours a day. I mean, it's an unbelievable ability. But not everybody has that ability. If a person, not the only one that says, there's a pasuk in Mishlei that says that a person tries to do what's right and then he can't and he complains to God. So the only guy says that means a person jumps madrigas, tries too quickly to change, can't change quickly, and not everybody can change even on a, even in long term. Everybody isn't capable of sublimating their energies into chachma to an endless degree like the only guy. I mean, you know, it's you have to know who you are. You have to know who the person is. I one time gave a share in Esav. I said if Esav would have known who he was, he wouldn't have been a Russia. Because he didn't have that capacity. But he wanted to be Tzaddik. He wanted to be Yaakov. And that was his mistake. He didn't recognize his shortcomings. The Rambam mentions in the Maor Rucham that certain people just don't have the ability to be involved in Chochmas Hashem to the same degree as others. So he was very jealous of that. So that's why he tried to kill his father, tried to convince him that he is really a big Tzaddik and he is really a big Chochmas. And he is involved in Chachma, but he wasn't. Had he been honest with himself, he wouldn't have been right.
But there is a idea of Kina Sofrim.
Well, the Kina Sofrim, the Gemara doesn't say it's a good thing. The Gemara just says that it's Mitarba Chachma, a fact. Mm-hmm. That you have teachers that are jealous, so it causes them to do more work, to do better work. Doesn't mean that it's a good Mida. The Gemara is showing you a benefit of it. The fact is it exists, and the fact is there's a benefit to it. Yes.
How does a person get over worrying about other people's opinion of them?
That's a good question. You had to read one time, sir. He said, that's Ayin Hara. That the person is concerned about how the other person looks at him. And that's why the Gemara says that Yochanan wasn't afraid of Ayin Hara, because he had no concern about what other people thought about him. It's a very high level of existence. But you're asking what a person can do to improve himself in that area. Person can do. It's an interesting thing. I mean, a person should want to be liked by people, because you say in the tefillah and the yiratz in the morning, that so that's naturally a good feeling that a person has, that other people like him. So it's a natural feeling. There's nothing wrong with that feeling. The only time there's something wrong with it is if that feeling overpowers you in terms of doing right or wrong. In other words, that you know something's wrong, but you're so addicted to how people think of you that you're going to do the wrong thing because you know they'll find favor in their eyes. That's when it's wrong. But if a person just has a desire, if you ask me, should a person have a desire that he doesn't care what anybody thinks of him ever, that wouldn't be a good thing. That wouldn't be a happy situation. And you see that from the Tefillah. So you see that you want, it's a happy state of mind where a person feels that other people like him. So that's a good thing. But he shouldn't be that needy of it that it will determine what his action is. If it's a bad action, he'll engage in a bad action because he wants people to like him. Then he's under the control of the emotion. But to enjoy the emotion, there's nothing wrong with it.
So if a person is that needy, is there anything that guy can do?
I mean, it's like everything else. I guess the person has to try to work on it and try to realize that really what other people think, many times, you know, you, yeah, it's funny, I just saw a word from the Pesach Rav. it says sheker, the pasuk says sheker as a susla shua, and it says that the assistance of the sus is a sheker, and then it says by man it says the shuv yeshua sa'adam. So it says what's the difference between shuv and sheker? It says sheker means it's a lie, and that means it could be, but it doesn't exist. Shuv means it doesn't exist, it's a waste. It's a waste. So he says, by the horse, the person relies on his horse, has his physical might. So that is a lie. Because sometimes, because he fools himself into thinking he's going to be saved by his physical might. But the physical might could save him. But the only thing is, the way the person thinks about it is a lie many times. That he relies on the power of the physical and it doesn't come through for him. So it's not true. But sometimes it does. So that's why he says sheker shuva. It's a lie. But yeshuv yeshuva sa'adam, he says man's help is nothing. He says, because you don't get any, he says briefly, I don't know who wrote it, you don't get anything from man. What he means is that a faith in man is usually of such a nature that there's no reality to it. It's because we need it, we look for it, so we build it up to the point where it's worthless, and compared to how much faith the stock would put in. See, a person puts stock into the source, into the money, that's true, but it doesn't overdo it. But with man, he puts his tremendous faith in man. And it turns out that the man doesn't really help. So I guess one of the ways to recognize that the person shouldn't be that needy for man is to think about the fact that, what does it say? How difficult and even. Excuse me. It's a lot of books. The Vandam Chandler Sashua. Takes a Rucha Yashavad Masa. And 1 minute is gone. So the faith that the person places in man is not in proportion with the reality. So it's not that nobody can help you. I mean, you need people in society to help other people in order to attain jobs, to, you know, facet. I mean, that's true. But it comes from an overestimation of the powers of man and the faith in man and what man can do for you. So the person should work on the realization of the overestimation, not just try to negate it, because there is a certain measure of truth there too. But the overestimation is where the problem is. Overestimates that this person can save me. And that's not true. That's for sure, Yeshua sort of. So I guess that's the way to go about it. A lot of Tehillim is very good for that learning. Tehillim, learning Mishle is good. That would really, those two, I think, more than anything else, have examples of learning about people and the psychology of people, and where they can be helpful, where they're not helpful, how they react. So then you get a realistic view. Get a realistic view, you lose the neediness that's not based on reality. But the fact that a person wants to be liked by people is a normal thing and shouldn't try to be obliterated, because you see him as powerful. Not extreme. Person shouldn't go, that's the wrong. Extremes are not good.